We're going to talk this evening about marriage. I've entitled it, As God Intended. This is a lesson that I've preached a number of times when I hold meetings. I try to do something in the course of the week on the home and the family. And so I've actually debated this afternoon. I was working on combining two lessons that I did in a series, thinking about, depending on how the evening turned out, I might do this lesson or another one. And so we're doing this one. That's how that played out. But hopefully it'll be helpful to us as we consider the things that God has had to say. I've actually entitled the lesson itself, Love and Respect. Because I believe in Ephesians chapter 5, which we'll come to in a little bit, that they are at the heart of the man-wife, the husband-wife relationship, according to what Paul said in Ephesians chapter 5. That husbands are to love their wives and that wives are to fear or respect their husbands, depending on the translation. And so as we look at this material this evening, hopefully these will be some things that we will be fortified in. And as we think about the two becoming one flesh, it is a beautiful idea. It is a beautiful plan that God had in His wisdom. I've been married 37 years, have a lovely wife that is my greatest asset outside of the Lord, and we have been blessed to have four children, a daughter, twin boys, and another son, and then here are some of our grandchildren. We have had another one since then. My son-in-law is not in that picture because his mother is staying with him part of the year, and she could not be left, and my daughter-in-law right here is expecting any time now, and so I just say God is good. They are such a blessing. When I was a young man, I had an older preacher friend of mine. I was terribly old. He's probably as old as I am now. Tell me, he says, when you get to the place that I am in life, you'll look back and you'll see that basically there are going to be two things that are going to be really important to you. One is going to be the Lord's church, your relationship there, and the other is going to be your family. And all the rest of it really is just sort of there. It's not near as important. And I would just say amen to that. And these people mean more to me than my own life does. And as parents and grandparents, you know what I'm talking about. That's how that plays out. And as we look tonight at this matter of the marriage relationship and love and respect, I just want to say up front, I'm not trying to throw anybody a barbell that's struggling along. Anything that we have to say here is not intended to hurt anybody. It's intended to help us, hopefully, and especially as we work through our marriages, whether we've just been married a short time or whether you've been married 50 or 60 or 70 years, that some of these things will either refresh or challenge us to be the kinds of husbands or wife that God would like us to be. God designed it so a man would leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife. And you remember reading about that back in the book of Genesis. Starting in verse 18, it was not good for man to be alone. And in God's plan for the two to both become one flesh, they dwell together. And what God planted in the midst of this relationship, basically, is that her business is going to be to look out for him, and his business is going to be to look out for her. And I really believe that. And as we think about it, Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 12 talks about the worthy woman. You'll remember that text. And it says, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now what it says with that is the heart of her husband can trust in her and he will have no lack of gain. Why? Because she's looking out for his good. She is trying to do what's good for him. And then in Ephesians chapter 5 verse 25, husbands are to love their wives like Christ love the church. He shows us the supreme example. He sacrificed himself. And so what we have in a nutshell is that me as a husband, that I need to be looking after the needs and the welfare of my wife, both emotionally and physically. I protect her. I provide for her. And my wife needs to look out for me. She needs to respect me. She needs to help me and support me, especially as we think of this as Christians, that we support each other spiritually. Our daughter and son-in-law live in Roanoke, Virginia. He preaches there. There was a man by the name of Charlie King who attended there for a period of time. He lived in Texas. Now he's down in Florida with his kids. But he was a human resource guy for a nuclear power plant. Very, very able guy. But we were swapping stories. And my son-in-law was riding along with our daughter and my wife and I headed to Tennessee in December, and we were out in the middle of nowhere, and it was cold and snowy and blowing, and he asked permission to marry my daughter. That would have been a good place to open the door. But we were talking about that. I've got a great son-in-law. I was telling Charlie that, and he said, well, you know, we sort of did the same thing. My now son-in-law called and said, Charlie, I'd like to ask for the hand of your daughter in marriage. And Charlie's response to that, he says, well, here's the deal, son. We've spent all these years with one purpose in mind for her. That's to get her to heaven. Is that your purpose for marriage? He says, yes, it is. And they're doing well. The two shall become one flesh. The power and the provision of God is tremendous. And as we think about the two becoming one flesh, we're talking about challenges that certainly are there. You may or may not be able to see 1 Corinthians 7, 33 and 34 there, but when we marry, we take on certain responsibilities. We have distractions. I'm not only concerned about myself and feeding myself and protecting myself, but I have the responsibility to look after her. I have that as a man and as a husband. I have that as a preacher. I have a responsibility to take care of my wife and my family. God didn't remove those. And my wife has her responsibilities toward me. And so 1 Corinthians 7 talks about that. Now I want to show you a picture of a very special couple to me. And this couple's name is Pablo and Nelda. And what we see here is that Pablo and Nelda actually live in Belize. He was in an accident probably 25 plus years ago. A logging truck unloaded. And so he is paralyzed. He's in a wheelchair all through these years. He has no feeling from here down. And they live in a little shack of a place. You go in there and you see daylight all around the bottom. There's poisonous snakes and everything. It could come in and bite him. They wouldn't even know it until he was dead. He has no feeling. But Pablo and Nelda invited Ken McDaniel and I in. They wanted us to come and eat with them. And so we went to their house, and she made a beautiful pile of rice and black beans. It was good. And I wrote down here the quote of what she said. She says, I want to cook good for Pablo so he will love me that much more. She's been serving him in that wheelchair for 20 plus years. And her spirit is, I want to be a better cook. I want to do all I can to look after my husband so he'll love me ever that much more. They already had a good relationship. I walked out of that house and I told Ken, I said, look, Ken, I'm not worthy to be under this roof. Some of the simplest people in the world can teach us some of the greatest lessons we'll ever learn. And as we think about marriage, we live in a time where people just sort of cast off marriage as if something that got out of a box of Cracker Jacks, and some of you know what Cracker Jacks are still, of not much worth, and of not much commitment. But God said it was till death do us part, and that's exactly what he meant. But we live in a society that is very selfish in its nature. And if you ask me the greatest marriage problem, it's not money, it's not communication, and the other list of things that people put in there. It's a matter of selfishness. It's the matter of this selfishness that destroys relationships. Selfishness is defined as a person, an action, or a motive lacking consideration for others, concerned chiefly with one's own personal profit and pleasure. This is what I want. And that is the philosophy, and that is the mindset of our nation. That's what our educational systems have been promoting for the last few decades. And many of the religious institutions in this country as well have been promoting this idea of self-centeredness. I want to feel good about myself. I'll tell you, the Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible says we need to learn to be people who love. We need to learn to be servants. We need to learn those characteristics that we see in Christ. I'll tell you what, it seems counterintuitive. But when I'm selfish and I'm always working to get what I want, reality is I'm probably not going to be a very happy person. But if I can learn to be more like my Lord and serve, I'll find a lot more happiness in life than in this. And as we talk about marriage tonight, and we talk about these two people become one flesh, that principle is as true as ever. And I'll just let you know up front, I consider it an honor to serve my wife. I consider it an honor to do whatever I can to help her, to look after her needs, to comfort her, to hold her when she's ready to cry, to laugh with her when she laughs, to rejoice when she rejoices, to dry dishes or wash dishes on occasion. It's a privilege, and it's a blessing. And as we look at the relationship that we're talking about here, there's a picture you may or may not be able to see very well, but we grow together as the years pass. This is actually a picture of a tree I took in India. This is like a palm tree, and this is another tree. Sort of looks like maybe like an oak tree by our standard. But this palm tree grows right up out of the middle of that. And I saw several of those over there. And you talk about a picture of this idea of the two becoming one, growing together. That's what's supposed to happen in this marriage relationship. And it is certainly a powerful thing. When my wife and I were dating, she's from Tennessee. When we were dating, I was in the Army. Hadn't been a Christian real long at that time. But we would drive along in my Firebird out in those country roads trying to get out to her mom and dad's house. And she told me about this old couple on a hill, maybe 3/4 of a mile from where mom and dad lived. And she said, this old couple is so neat. They barely get around, but you can see they're all moony-eyed about each other. They're best friends. They're more in love with one another now than they have been in the past. They've shared life together. And I just thought about that so many times. And we talked about that. That's where we want to be someday. And that, young people or old people, wherever you're in that spectrum, is the spirit that we want to have. As we love the Lord, as we love each other, as we work together, that we grow together. And I tell you what something that life has taught me, that those old friendships and relationships are so precious. There are people that I've been away from for several years. Maybe they're off preaching here or they've moved there. And you come back together and you sit around the table and it's like you haven't been apart 5 minutes. Because you've got old ties, you know their character, who they are, and you just pick up and go on. In the marriage relationship, that is so also. And I was telling Joshua something that impressed me several years ago, many years ago. A fellow was going to meet with some of his World War II buddies. I forget Guadalcanal or where, Normandy. Those guys had been in that war together. But what I would see in their relationship were some deep and abiding ties that they had because of what they went through together. If you weren't there, if you didn't go through that, you don't fully understand. And I don't fully understand, but I could see that in them. And I thought so many times, that's the way the marriage relationship is. As we spend the years together, as we hammer out life through the good times and the bad times, through the health problems, the financial crises, the kid problems, whatever it may be, we build some ties that do not come cheap. And people that will not act like Christians ought to act will never have that blessing. If God said you can have any woman in the world for your wife, I'd just say, I've got her. But if my wife died, there is no woman in the world that could take her place. There's nobody that knows me like she knows me. She's brought my children into this world. She has been there as a support when I needed support. I've been there to support her when she needed. I was there when her mother died. She was there when my mother died. We've lived life together. I've been in the same place preaching for 29 years, and it's had its ups and downs and challenges, and we've stood together. What I'm trying to say, and maybe I'm overemphasizing, maybe you got it right away, but this process of growing together from young to old as the kind of people that God wants us to be is such a great blessing in life. Read Ecclesiastes. Go to chapter 9 and see some of the blessings. While we're here, God is in the center of it all. But there's some earthly things that have a benefit when we put that in its place. And one of them is that you live with that wife of your youth. And that you enjoy, you rejoice life with that woman. And so God has provided that. This is not what God desires or what God designed. Obviously, what happens in the book of Genesis, all that God made was good. It was very good, is the last thing that it says. And then we find it talks about further details of man and woman in Genesis chapter 2. And that was a good relationship. But you know what happened. You know what entered into the middle of Genesis chapter 3 was the devil. And the devil and sin are behind our marriage problems. That's the way that works. He's trying to destroy the very good things that God gave. God gave a tongue to be used in a good way. Read James chapter 3. The devil's in there working at trying to get us to misuse our tongue, to slander, to gossip, and those kinds of things. God gave a sexual relationship as to be a great blessing, and not only for procreation, but to draw a husband and wife together in intimacy and warmth and care for each other. What's the devil do? He tries to get right in the middle and say, hey, but have you thought about this? Or she didn't treat you right, or he didn't treat you right. See, now, this isn't really what God said it was going to be. You need to think about that. It's the devil that's in the middle of all that stuff that we can think about, or that selfishness. That's right there. And of course, you know, who is the one kindling the fire for such selfishness? When we think about the marriage relationship, God designed the two to become one flesh. How far would you get apart if you were tied together? God made this permanent relationship that a man is bound to his wife as long as the two live. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. Now what I have to do to read this, I either have to step back here and look at it, or I have to get up here and look at it. So I only have bifocals. Trifocals would work good here, but that's all blurry out here. So if I'm up here looking sort of funny, that's why. Well, that's not why I'm up here looking funny, but I'm looking different from it. Okay. And so as we look at this, we wouldn't get far apart. And if we knew that this is really the relationship that we share, we'd do everything that we could to preserve it. And certainly that's what God wants us to do. Now, in the book of Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33, back in verse about 22, he starts talking about the husband and wife stuff. The point of the book of Ephesians is Christ and his church. And he talks about that here. And in the midst of that, he throws in the husband and wife comparison in the fifth chapter. And as he summarizes that, he says in verse 33, nevertheless, each individual among you also is to love his own wife. Now, I understand he's talking about the men there. Since he's to love his own wife, that all the men have that responsibility to love his own wife, even as himself, and that the wife, she must see to it that she respects her husband. Or other translations say, fears her husband. Shows due respect. And so, in a nutshell, that's how Paul wraps up the things that he has just said. You realize that, number one, the submission there is because God said it, because of the creation order itself, 1 Timothy chapter 2 and other places. But associated with that, this respect of her husband as she should, that this kind of submission will come out of that. Number one, a respect for God, but secondly, a respect for her husband and the role that he has. And that a husband has the obligation to love his own wife even as himself. I guarantee you, I could come back there and hit Keith's toe with a big roofing hammer and he will flinch. And I tell you, he's not going to be worried about my toe when I do that, is he? He's going to be looking at that big old toe out there. He's going to be throbbing. It's attached to his body and to his brain. And so I understand that in this passage, Paul basically describes the relationship that a husband has to his wife in a way that even a bonehead like me can figure it out. You wouldn't do yourself wrong. You wouldn't leave yourself out in the cold. You wouldn't leave yourself hungry. You wouldn't leave yourself in this and that situation. You love your wife like you would yourself. You look after her as though she is your own flesh. Oh, by the way, she is. The two became one flesh. And so this kind of love is what we're talking about here in the book of Ephesians. And without trying to get technical about it, because I'm not a real technical guy, but what he's talking about here is this is a command, and it's in an ongoing way. So this isn't a hit and miss kind of thing that a husband is to do. He is given this command. You love your wife and you do it day in and day out, hour after hour. You keep doing it. It's ongoing. And the same kind of respect concerning the woman. We think of this, about this matter of his responsibility and her responsibility. There was a book written called Love and Respect, and it has some okay things in it. But you see how this works together. And you know, it makes it easier for her to respect me when I love her. And when she respects me, it makes it that much easier for me to love her. Now, I have the responsibility to love her even if she doesn't show me respect. And she has the responsibility to show me due respect because I am a husband in this relationship, even if I am not loving as I should. But I tell you what, when we do what we're both supposed to do, it sort of feeds in a good way on each other, and it just gets to be really good. I grew up in farm country, and I used to, when I talk about this, say, if I love her and it'll make it my business to serve her and to meet her needs and to just look after her, and she'll do the same for me, we'll just be as happy as two pigs in mud. Doesn't get much better than that. But in seriousness, just stop and think about that practically. If your husband has a wife that's there to serve him and look after his good, his well-being, and she has a husband that's there to look after her good and her well-being, to serve her, that cares about her, she's more important to him than he is to himself, how can they but be happy? You don't have to have a PhD to figure that out. And I'll tell you what, there have been plenty of folks that didn't have real high educations that had some great lives and marriages and relationship and died in old age after the wisdom of God along this very way. And God is glorified in that. But we live in a society that doesn't think a whole lot about that. Well, two better halves make a better whole. And as we try to be what we need to be, certainly will help the situation as a whole. I've got a little story here that is called Papa's Sermon. And the fellow was preparing his sermon, sat there at the desk, and his little daughter was off here at the edge of the room in the other room playing. And he called the daughter here and said, "Sweetie, would you go downstairs in the third bookshelf up by the kitchen table and get me that little black book that is there?" And so she was just so happy to help. And she ran downstairs and she came back up and she brought him the wrong book. He didn't even hardly notice that. He said, "Oh, I appreciate that so, sweetheart. You did such a good job. Thank you so much." And she went off playing. And then a little later, he slipped off privately and quietly and got the book that he was after. But the end of that story says, that man is the kind of man that I'd like to hear his sermon. Because he understands something about people. And he understands something about life. And as we think about the relationship that we have, I tell you what, we don't always get it right as husband and wife, but we need to try. And as their mate, we need to recognize that, and we need to be appreciative of those efforts to try to do what they need to do. Well, I'm going to move on here sort of quickly with a couple things in just a moment. But I made this statement back some years ago, and it sort of resonates with me. The Lord made us to complement one another, not to compete with each other. We live in a time where sometimes you see men and women sort of competing, especially in the way our world is laid out right now. But I understand that, you know, there are women, there's many women just as competitive as men are. My mother-in-law had a great rule. When we'd get together, we'd play games. Husbands and wives cannot sit together. We had to have somebody in between us. We had a family card game that we played. It's called Rage, and it got pretty competitive. So her wisdom prevailed, and there was a lot of competitive people in her room. But you know, God designed us so that we complement each other. That's the way it works. Old Rich back there is putting one of these big beams in the railroad trestle, and he takes a big bolt there and puts a nut on. Those things complement each other, don't they? And that's the way the husband-wife relationship, like a bolt and a nut. And I won't ask you which one's the nut. But as we think about this process, we are meant to complement each other. And my wife has ability and capacities and strengths that I don't have. And I have some that she doesn't have. And when we compete, not only can we not do what we could do, it even cuts that down. But when we complement each other, we put those strengths together and we work together, God makes it so we can be a strong whole and we can do so much more. And many more blessings come out of our lives. And just think about what that does for our children. Think about what that does for our grandchildren as they see that kind of love and partnership as God designed in the marriage relationship. Well, as we think about this matter of respect, we could talk about the servants and how servants are supposed to show respect to their masters, both to the good and to the froward, or the unreasonable. So, not all those masters were good guys and treated them right, but he said, you show them due respect. Now, my point isn't to talk about the servant-master relationship here, but as you keep reading about that, what you find out that also is associated with that in the following two verses is that when you do that, God is glorified. You're serving the Lord. And when we think about the marriage relationship, you need to remember that as well. I had a young lady that I've known for several years. At my age, you know, that young is sort of a wider gap than it used to be. She's got a couple of kids that are 15, 16 years old now, so that tells you how young she is. But the light came on to her back a few years ago in a situation. My husband didn't always what he should be. But I understand now that I'm doing this, I'm serving the Lord, not only my husband. And she said, that just helped my attitude so much. When he treats me unfair, I got to remember, I'm not just serving him, I need to serve him. I'm serving my Lord. When he doesn't treat me right and I show him the proper respect, I'm honoring my master. And I tell you, that helps us a lot. We get our perspective, our frame of mind right. It can help get us through a lot of things. And so in our marriage relationship. And so this is just an example of that very thing. In talking about the relationship of the husband and the wife, in 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 2, it talks about a wife in verse 1 who has an unbelieving husband. I was looking at this a day or two ago, and there's a translation called the Weymouth Translation. And the interesting thing in verse 1 there, they sort of did a paraphrase of it. And as they look at your life, they translated as they see your daily living, which is the idea that this unbelieving mate sees how the wife lives for the Lord. They observe, that means they see your chaste. That's pure, and there's that word again, respect or fear, like we saw in Ephesians 5. Behavior. Now, I'll tell you another thing here as we go on. My wife kindly fussed at me when I preached this at home sometime back. She says, you were just way too easy on the women and you were too hard on the men. I can get by with that. If I flip-flop that around, I'm going to be in trouble. But this goes both ways. And again, I'm not fussing at anybody. I'm challenging this. I'm telling me and telling you that God's plan is wonderful when we work his plan. And as we think about this relationship, the idea of respect, the dictionary says that respect is admiration, value, to show consideration for. Synonyms to that word of respect are admiration, high opinion, deference, esteem, reverence. These words imply action and expression, both privately and publicly. It's the attitude that we have that plays out in how we talk and how we act. Until we get our mindset right, we can try to do the other stuff, but it doesn't work out. Something that helped me a bit, it may not help you at all, but in the book of 1 Peter chapter 1, it tells us, quoting from the book of Leviticus, that we are to be holy because God is holy. That does not say that you're to act holy. It says that you're to be holy. Sometimes what happens if we try to act holy, we try to do the right kinds of things, but that's not our mindset. And it may not help you at all, but I tell you, it helped me a lot when I understand the difference between that. You're striving to do the right thing. No, I need to strive to think the right way, and then from that, do the right thing. I need to be holy, not simply act holy. And as we talk about the love for our wives and respect for husbands, we need to have respect for our husbands, ladies, for the position they have in the authority in the homes, as the head of the home, as fellows that are to protect and to provide for you. And when you respect them, when you make the decision, that's where that comes from. When you make that decision in your heart, then that will play out in your behavior. Just like if you think holy, you are holy, then you will act holy. When you feel respect for your husband or you feel love for your wife, then you will carry that out. So that's the way that works. And as we look at this matter of respect, certainly it plays out in a lot of ways. You know, we communicate in a lot of other ways besides words. There's a fellow that I did a funeral for here a couple of years ago at home. I've known him for many years. And he had been in the military in Germany. And he was telling me a story one time about this doctor who had invited him and his buddy into the house in Germany. And the doctor spoke good English, but his wife didn't speak English. But she brought out at the end of the meal this beautiful pineapple upside down cake. And my friend loved pineapple upside down cake. And he ate that. He said, that was the best pineapple upside down cake I've ever eaten in my life. And so Gene started to tell this doctor, he says, I would like you to tell your wife that this was magnificent, that this was the best. He didn't have to say anything else. She got the message. Didn't even speak the language. And she got the message. When we talk about respect of wives for their husbands, we talk about love for husbands for their wives, we communicate it in a lot of ways, friends, brethren. When it's in our heart, then that's what will come out of us. And that's what they'll be able to see in due course. Well, as we move on, since that clock keeps moving on, our motive is as servants of the Lord. In 1 Peter chapter 3, where we were at just a moment ago, you notice in the yellow here that wives will be submissive to their husbands, and their husbands as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior, which we've seen. But as you drop on down to the end of verse 5, they're to be submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. Now verse 7 brings us to the husbands. Husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with the weaker vessel, someone weaker. Since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. So again, in this, as a husband needs to be shown respect, what does this tell us about the wife? We show her respect and honor too, don't we? Do you know it? It is interesting to me. Husbands are told to love their wives on more than one occasion in the New Testament. I think, unless I've missed something, wives are never told to love their husbands with agape love in the New Testament. I mean, in a general way, we're to love one another. Because sometimes women sort of naturally do that. And the other thing is because of this authority relationship that is there. Wives are obligated to love their husbands. They're obligated to love their enemy. And so a husband qualifies them there up somewhere, right? But as we look at this, we find that also that husbands are to honor their wives, just like the wives are to show honor and respect to their mates. This is a mutual operation. And boy, it works good when we do what God wants us to do with this. It blesses us in so, so many ways. When I was in grade school, I think I was in the eighth grade, I had a guy as an art teacher. His name was Mr. McKinney. He had been in the Navy, and he had got in a bar brawl, and a guy broke a bottle and took an eye out. He had a glass eye. Big scrapping guy. Nice gentleman. But one day in art class, he decided, I'm going to teach you fellas some manners. And so he just started in a very gentlemanly way. He said, now fellas, when a lady is with you and you're getting ready to go through the door, you open that door for her. You let her go through first. And when you're getting ready to go up the stairs, you let her go up first and you walk up behind her. That way she slips, you'll be there to help catch her. When you're going down the stairs, you go first. In case she slips, you'll be there to help break her fall. Now, he doesn't remember that class. But I do. And even before I was a Christian, I tried to practice it some. But when I was dating my wife, you know, I would try to practice that. And after we were married and we were both going to college, I was working at an IGA one day. And one of the fellows came into the store there. He put his arm around a big old guy who was in school with his daughter. His name was Mr. Ackman. Put him in and says, you keep up what you're doing. So watch that. I said, I saw your wife get in the car the other day, and you were there opening the door for her. You were showing your respect. You know, as we show honor one to the other, it comes back to bless us in so, so many ways. Fellas, we need to be learning that. And I tell you what, since I'm in that grandpa category, got a bunch of those grandkids, grandpas, you need to be teaching that to your kids and your grandkids. Hopefully you already taught it to your kids. But they need to see you treating your wife that way, and grandmas, that you treat your husband with the kind of respect that we're talking about. Because those grandkids are not going to get it off the television. They're not going to get it off the internet. They're probably not going to get it off their neighbor. And if we don't show them the way, where, pray tell, are they ever going to see it? We need to live in a way that honors God in all things. Well, husbands, love your wives. Ephesians chapter 5, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and he gave himself up for her. Husbands ought to also love their own wives as their own bodies. For he who loves his own wife loves himself. You know, Sewell Hall's sister was in a gospel meeting that I did probably 25, 30 years ago. Frank, I think, was the last name. I can't remember. It was her husband's first name. I forget what the last name was. He worked for the IRS. I remember that. But I made this point back then, that one of the greatest gifts that you can give yourself, fella, is you love your wife like you should, and you're giving yourself a great gift. And she commented a couple times about that afterwards. I'm sure she already knew it. But she was trying to reinforce that in me, I think, probably. Trying to help me along. But when you love your wife like you should love your wife, that is going to come back to bless you. I mean, unless she doesn't have anything turned on between ears at all. I mean, she can't help but be impressed with that. And the other side of that's true, as wives show the kind of respect due to men. You remember how God perfectly dealt with Israel and how she was unfaithful? The book of Hosea, the first three chapters, chapter 1 and 3 particularly, talks about God telling Hosea to take Gomer's wife and how she was unfaithful. She was a wife of whoredom. The second and third child she has there was by some other man. And long story short, those first chapters are saying, now Hosea, you are ready to go preach because you know how my people have treated me. God did exactly what he was supposed to do and Israel didn't. And Hosea was trying to do what he was supposed to do and Gomer didn't. And my point is that I understand that it takes two to tango, as the old adage goes. It takes two people to make this work. But what we have as an example is God. Here's how you live, husbands. You keep doing your wife good. You keep trying to win her heart. You keep trying to win her soul, even if she's not very cooperative. As long as you're drawing breath and she's your wife, she's alive, you keep striving to that end, as you see God perfectly doing all that in the Scriptures. Now, I've got ahead of myself here. Husbands, we are the head of our homes. God put us there. We have a responsibility to lead our homes, especially spiritually, as well as providing and all. But do you understand what that means, that you're the head of the house? It used to sort of be, you would hear this iron-fisted, I'm the head of the house kind of stuff. Go read John chapter 13. The disciples kept fussing with each other, who is the big dog? Who's really the most important apostle here? And Jesus talked to them about it on a number of occasions, and as we talked about Sunday morning, in John chapter 13, finally, this is going on again. And so he girds himself with a towel, he gets down and washes their feet, and then he tells them what this is all about. He says, you call me Lord, and you call me teacher. And that's right, because that's what I am, that's who I am. I am the Lord. But I came as a servant. And in my home, I am the head of our house by God-given authority. But I am not a lord that is self-serving. I'm supposed to be a lord in my home as compared to my lord who came as a servant. And again, it goes back to what we said at the beginning. When I do what I'm supposed to do, when I learn to serve my wife and she learns to serve me, there's not going to be anybody in this world I want to snuggle up with more, is there? God's plan works wonderfully. We could talk about love, all these verbs that are used here, talking about state of being and action and so forth. As husbands are to love their wives, you're familiar with that, the clock's away from us. We've got to be able to talk with each other. More often than not, women talk a lot and men don't talk very much. If you ask people, that's how this communication process tends to work. I have a really, really good friend and his wife, and she doesn't talk much and he talks a lot. And so she's had to bump it up and he's had to hold it back. And they're doing better that way, I'll just say it that way. But there has to be this communication. We've got to be able to talk. And again, when you look at marriage counselors, one of the big things that comes up on the top is that communication doesn't always take place very well. I read a little story that about a guy got a promotion job and had a little extra money, and so he bought his wife a new car finally. She'd always wanted this car, and so got her this car. Just a few weeks later, she pulled up to the stop sign, pulled out in front of another guy, and was in a fender bender. And so she thought, oh, he's going to kill me. And so she gets in the glove compartment, she starts digging out the registration and all, and in there was a note. And the note said, "Remember, dear, in case of an accident, I love you, not the car." Oh, that was great. But what we see in the midst of this, you know, that was a way he could write that down and communicate, but he's trying to live that. He was trying to do that and providing a car for her. I can't provide a new car for my wife, but I try to do whatever I can in any other ways to provide for her and let her know. And we talk and we communicate. And there's nobody I'd rather talk to. That's the way that works out as the years go on. Well, I'm going to buzz over this, but sometimes we start having friction. Things get out of balance. And then when the husband or the wife say certain things, instead of putting the best spin on it, it's easy for us to start putting the worst spin on it. That's sort of human. It's not hard for us to do, believe me. But we want to take it for the best. By the way, love would tell us to do that, doesn't it? Go back to 1 Corinthians 13. And so we want to put the best spin on things that we can. Strive to meet the needs of your mate. Take whatever is said in the best way that you can with the midst of all of this. Because, you know, there are problems that will arise. As those challenges are there, there are going to be mountains that you have to climb in your married life. But if you will do it together, the view is good from the top, and it's even better from eternity. I have a really good friend in South Africa by the name of Les Maydell. He was fighting stage 4 rectal colon cancer, had surgery, radiation, chemo, and all that stuff. And I sent him a card. I'd love to. Found a dozen more cards like it, but basically it said something like this. It says, the climb to the top is hard, but think how beautiful the view will be when you get there. And by the way, by the grace of God, he got there, and since then he's had a whole bunch of grandkids, and he's still going strong. They were in my home here just a couple months ago. But by the grace of God, we are blessed. And I tell you, although we've got our challenges in life right now, my wife and I do, there's nobody that I'd like to share the view with more than her. And it's a beautiful view. And what we're about is what is ahead. I find it interesting. I was listening to the radio some years ago. And out of a lot of marriages that were surveyed, folks that divorced and folks that didn't, and he's just a secular counselor, what they found out statistically is the people who divorced didn't really have any different problems or more problems than the people that didn't divorce. We all have problems. There are always challenges in marriage. I mean, that happens. And I realize by character and makeup and a bunch of other training and so forth, they may vary some. The difference was not the problems. The difference is how we respond to the problems. And that's what came out of the survey of these marriage counselors dealing with a lot of people. And so as we travel life's road together, as we climb the mountains and hit the potholes, we hang in there and we deal with them as they're before us, and they can help us to draw closer together as we share life. When marriage is as God intended, it is truly, truly a great blessing. There's no way that I can tell you how wonderful it is if you're not there. But I'm going to just tell you it's worth whatever sacrifice that is necessary. I want to read you this paper, and the lesson will be yours. This is called Laughter in the Walls. I love this. Laughter in the walls. I pass a lot of homes on my way home. Some pretty, some expensive, some inviting. But my heart always skips a beat when I turn down the road and see my house nestled against the hill. I guess I'm especially proud of the house, the way it looks, because I drew the plans myself. It started out large enough for us. I even had a study, but two teenage boys now reside in there. And it had a guest room. My girl and 9 dolls are permanent guests. It had a small room Peg had hoped would be her sewing room. The two boys swinging on the Dutch door had claimed the room as their own. So it really doesn't look right now as if I am much of an architect. But it will get larger again. One by one, they will go away. To work, to college, to service, to their own houses. Then there will be room, a guest room, a study, a sewing room, just for the two of us. But it won't be empty. Every corner, every room, every nick in the coffee table will be crowded with memories. Memories of picnics and parties and holidays, bedside vigils and summer fires, winters going barefoot, leaving for vacation, cats, conversations, black eyes, graduations, first dates, ball games, arguments, washing dishes, bicycles, dogs, boat rides, getting home from vacation, meals and rabbits and 1,000 other things that fill the lives of those who would raise 5. And Peg and I will sit quietly by the fire and listen to the laughter in the walls. To God be the glory.